KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in downtown San Francisco.
I'm in the Mission.
Oakland, 33rd and Telegraph.
Off Piedmont Avenue.
Border of Oakland and Berkeley.
Emeryville, California. Woo, represent.
Coming up, we're driving in an express lane. That is, if we pay a small fee.
Why do we have to pay?
Then we get down with some socially conscious hip hop for little kids. And it's real.
We're out to make the uncomfortable normal.
And we'll hear about a young woman who's sharing her knowledge of botany and what she calls the magical properties of plants.
Science is just magic understood. And the magic that you should understand with sage is that it's antimicrobial.
That's all coming up today on Cross Currents. Stick around. A growing number of highways around the Bay Area now have express lanes. Those are the toll roads that are free for carpools but cost money for drivers riding solo. Over the next several years, we're going to see a lot more of those express lanes. A total of 550 miles are planned for the Bay Area by the year 2035. And wherever they go, they tend to stir up the strong feelings reserved for traffic and money. 2 years ago, new express lanes opened on 580 near Livermore in Alameda County. So a few months into their operation, KALW's Eli Wertschafter went to find out how commuters were adjusting to the new rules of the road.
So I just got out at the Dublin Pleasanton BART station. That's the end of the line going east.
Exiting the train with me are people coming home from work. They're heading down to the BART parking lot to drive the rest of the way home. And a lot of them are now faced with a choice that a few months ago they didn't have to make. Do they want to pay a toll to get home faster? I head down to the parking lot to find out.
Excuse me, are any of you traveling east on 580? 580 going east?
Finally, one woman stops to talk. She looks exhausted and in a hurry.
Are you going east on 580? Yes, you are. Do you have opinions about the new toll lanes?
I think that they make it worse.
Debbie Hernandez commutes 5 hours a day between San Francisco and Modesto.
And this is the worst commute ever. Ever.
And it's worse than it was before.
It's way worse than it was before. I guess unless you're paying.
New express lanes opened here in February. Hernandez says it's worse now because when the lanes end, there's this big slowdown.
We're sitting here waiting, and these people are paying, and when they get up there, they're bottlenecking it, and we can't get in.
But it's not just the way they're executed. She's outraged by the whole idea of express lanes.
Why do we have to pay? Commuters have to pay for everything. We're the only ones that have to pay for parking. We're the only ones that have to pay for the fast track. We pay the most going over the bridge. Why can't we have a break?
Around this time, I notice a silver-haired man in a blue button-up shirt who stopped nearby. He's kind of watching us out of the corner of his eye. I give him a wave.
We've been talking about the 580 express lanes. Are you interested?
They're worse. It's worse.
It's made it worse?
I think it's made it worse.
I love it.
Okay, now you can talk to him.
Hernandez heads off. The sooner she gets into traffic, the sooner she gets home.
Yeah, I can't pay for it, so yeah. All right.
The silver-haired man is named Philip Dole. He works for Salesforce in the city. The express lane takes at least 40 minutes off his drive home from BART.
To me, it's worth it to get home to my family a little earlier to have a sit-down dinner. So the $3 to $4 that it costs every day, it's not a big deal. Seems like a bridge toll to me.
That toll goes up and down depending on traffic. So to find out what it is this afternoon, I have to get in a car.
Well, listen, do you think it would be all right if I traveled with you and like actually got to see the toll lane?
Sure.
Yeah.
Nice. I get in the car with Philip Dole. He shows me his fancy new fast track pass. It has a little black switch that lets him say how many people are in the car.
Right now I have 2 people in here, so I can set it to the 2. So you're saving me some money today.
Normal carpool lanes are often underused. An express lane still encourages carpooling, but it's like a pressure valve for the rest of traffic. That's why, in most cases, adding an express lane improves commute times for everyone, not just drivers in the fast lane. We get on the highway, and ahead there's a sign with a light-up digital display.
So right now it shows just to go to the next exit is $1.25. You know, obviously since traffic's moving pretty good, they don't have it quite as expensive as it could potentially be.
The express lane is always supposed to move quickly. The more people use it, the higher the price gets.
We'll go ahead and get in it.
Above the car, a black sensor reads his pass. Compared to the carpool lanes we're used to, it's easier to catch cheaters in an express lane. Somewhere off to our right, Debbie Hernandez is stuck in traffic, and we sail right past.
Yeah, you know, it absolutely kind of brings up a classist feel to it.
Stuart Cohn is the co-founder of the advocacy group Transform.
And there are kind of significant equity questions that we've got to grapple with. And yet the current system is failing everybody.
Express lanes can feel unfair, like there's a fast lane for rich people and traffic for everyone else. But Cohn says that they can actually make the transportation system more equitable. It all depends on how you spend the toll revenue. Part of it has to cover the cost of opening and running the lane, but the rest can be spent improving public transit.
Make sure that that transit service is targeted to the disadvantaged communities that need it the most. Make sure that transit service is affordable.
He says new express lanes could be great for buses in particular. They get in for free, so it's a double win. The toll revenue can make bus service better, and the new lanes can move the buses faster.
It almost becomes like whole new rail lines. In theory, buses would be able to travel very quickly at, say, 60 or 65 miles an hour. You start to emulate BART speeds at that point.
Back on 580, we're coming up on our exit.
All right, so now I'm going to start to get over one lane.
And as we get out of the express lane, yeah, there's that bottleneck that Debbie Hernandez was complaining about. It's not great for Philip DeLay either.
This is probably the most dangerous part of this.
We make it off the highway. Today's ride in the express lane, well, if I hadn't been in the car, would have cost about $4.
You know, I used to go home exhausted. Now I don't, you know, so it's well worth it.
DeLay drops me off at a gas station. I thank him for the ride, and he takes off.
Well, now I'm at an ARCO station in the middle of Livermore, and I've got to figure out how to get home.
I find a bus that'll take me back to BART. It uses the express lane. No traffic.
Eli is KLW's transportation reporter. He first reported that story in June 2016. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. When we think of hip-hop and rap shows, we may think of nightclubs, big, loud concert halls. But how about 11 a.m. at the public library in the kids section? That's where you may find the Alphabet Rockers. The band has brought hip-hop to young kids through song and dance, and they tackle some hard-hitting subjects like race relations and social injustice. Bandmates Caitlin McGaw and Tommy Shepard Jr. joined me in studio to share their new album called Rise, Shine, #Woke, and talk about what being woke can even mean to a little kid.
Rise! Change will not come if we wait for some other person, or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change that we seek.
I float like a butterfly, sing like a bee, gonna be the change.
We believe that if a person of color that is young has to know about these things, then why shouldn't anybody else have to know about these things?
Mm. And when you say these things?
The world.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, the ills of the times. We have to find the language to speak about it because my child is Black and Mexican. We have to tell him about so many things that maybe a white parent doesn't have to tell their 9-year-old, 10-year-old child. However, if they don't, and then they are witness to it, they're going to think it's okay. So we feel like, yeah, if there's a certain group of kids that have to know about this stuff, then maybe all of them should know about it. And that way they can understand it a little bit better.
Have you found that socially conscious music, like little kids can absorb that and understand that?
Mm. Yes.
And on what level?
This is about us not just putting up pictures of giraffes in our kids' bedroom until they're seven. This is about us turning off messages on TV that show black folks in a poor light, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is about us telling the story of Colin Kaepernick and how brave he is and who else is brave and what does bravery mean? How can we be brave for each other? Mm-hmm. It's really like we have to teach moral lessons to our kids every day. So it is a choice to not talk about real stuff. What's cool is like I have a friend from Leap Arts in San Francisco, shout out to them. Her daughter's 4 years old, has memorized every word. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here, when she tells me this, I have chills. A four-year-old knows every word to this album. What does that mean?
It only means to her what her capacity can take, and that's gonna make her ask questions.
Mm.
The things that she doesn't understand is gonna make her wonder, and that's where wokeness happens. When they ask you what you are, you respond, I'm a star. They don't really know what they do. It's no secret that you are you. When they ask you what you are, you respond, I'm a star. They don't really know what they do. It's no secret.
What is it about hip hop as a genre that is more powerful than another, you know, not to diss any other genres, but what is it about hip hop that can relay these messages that you're talking about? Why hip hop?
It's a culture. It's a freedom culture, and it's a culture based on expression and making things out of nothing.
Hmm. And like on a legit level, not on a, we're going to remix Who Let the Dogs Out and turn that into a kid's song and call it hip hop, because it's really a disservice to that. First of all, that artist made that song for another reason. And we are really intentional about what sounds do we put into this. And even, you know, the producer we're working with out of Atlanta is putting songs on the radio for young adults, you know. So we know it's contemporary. We know it's their music.
All right. Tell me about Rise.
It was when Philandro Castile was murdered. And that same weekend, my family had posted a picture of my niece with some police officers. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know, we gotta interrupt something here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going on too long.
And it's not going anywhere. You are going to touch the sky.
You hit me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes. You may hurt me with your hatefulness, nonetheless, still I rise.
You may hit me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes, you may hurt me with your hatefulness, nonetheless, just like air, still I rise.
If they call us bad names, look them in the eye. If they push us down, be a true ally. If they try to build a wall, we won't comply. Cause when they go low, we go high, we go high.
That song was called Rise from their latest album, Rise, Shine, hashtag woke.
Yes.
How do you take this material that is very painful and heavy and turn it into something joyful?
I think it's heavy for people who haven't talked about it before.
Because
we've had some interviews where people say, wow, this is really heavy. And we're like, oh, it is? Okay. Because like this is how most people are navigating every day. So it's actually just life.
It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. Yeah.
It's Tuesday. You know, we're out to make the uncomfortable normal.
Are you finding that audiences are responding to that, or have you lost some folks when you got heavy?
Honestly, don't care who we lost.
It's more about finding.
Yeah, it's more about finding.
Because here's the thing, in this Bay Area, we are a culture of many cultures. A family will show up, you don't necessarily know, or a group will show up, you don't know whose mom is whose, right? That's always been our audience. So now we have more tools for them.
Mm-hmm.
So when they show up, they're like, okay, you got my babies now. Like, you really got them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a privilege.
Thanks to Atemu Atan for producing that interview. The Alphabet Rockers were nominated for a Grammy this year. Grammy night is Sunday, so good luck, guys. You can catch them at Ashkenaz in Berkeley on February 11th, the San Francisco Public Library February 12th, and they've got many more shows around the Bay coming up. Find them all at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. Birdcage, carving out a true path right up to center stage. Making my voice a tradition, not a holiday. It's more than a month, man. My history is every day, and every day I pray for Taza. Yes, I do. I pray for you that you can tie. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hena Baba. There are witches among us. They gather at Oakland's Lake Merritt for a monthly witch walk led by a woman named Phoenix Armenta. She calls herself a woke witch and teaches her acolytes about plants, edible, homeopathic, maybe even magical. Who comes to these witch walks? People seeking knowledge and kin. Reporter Margaret Catcher joined one of these tours on a sunny Sunday afternoon. She brings us this audio postcard with Phoenix Armenta as our guide.
I started this tour kind of as a way to get healthy. I started walking the lakes every day as a way to kind of help me with my bipolar disorder. And as I started walking the lakes, I started noticing the plants, kind of having a communication with the plants and really being curious about them. All right, everybody, let's get going.
I sort of thought of myself as being kind of witchy for a while now, but it's hard to find it's difficult to reach out and find other people who identify with that, so it's nice to see a whole community walking around here in Oakland, the sort of witchy community.
Well, my name is Deborah, but my magical name is Sable. I'm a witch, and I am looking to connect and with other witches and learn more, do things with other witches, really, and network.
My interest is more practical than woo-woo. I teach urban survival and disaster preparedness. A big disaster happens. It's about, can you stay alive long enough for help to come?
Hi, everyone. We're stopping over here by the eucalyptus tree. Eucalyptus magically is for protection and healing. If you can grab one of the leaves and just kind of break it open, you can smell it.
A little floral and a little citrusy, too.
Very nice. That's so good.
It smells really good. It's very faint, but yeah. It's kind of a floral, herbaceous, sweet scent.
All right, this way.
I mean, it's just a framework, you know, for seeing the world. Really seeing the magic in things and appreciating it, so that then, like, the more you appreciate it, then the more magical your life becomes.
Science is just magic understood. And the magic that you should understand with sage is that it's antimicrobial, and the smoke itself is antimicrobial. So when you are smudging or cleansing your house, you're literally cleansing of the bacteria. It has a real, actual, practical use in addition to the spiritual cleansing that goes along with it. We are here to talk about roses. So roses in the magical lore represent love. This is called garlic grass. Garlic is very good for banishing vampires. It's very good for your health. This is edible. Ginkgo helps improve your memory because it's a blood thinner. Medically, pine is an expectorant. And these are coastal tea trees. Tea trees are universal panacea, which means that they're just like good for all health things. So pine cones kind of represent the third eye or pineal gland. Rosemary will calm you down and make you more alert. Plantain magically has the power of invisibility.
Witchcraft is what you're doing is you're setting your intention for what kind of world you live in, and then you do the magic, and then you got to do the work to make it happen, right? There's magic and mystery all around. You just have to know where to look. And that's just what I want to do, is just show you where to look to find the magic in your life.
So I really appreciate you all coming out.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was Phoenix Armenta, the Woke Witch, and Joseph Wren, Deborah Dabani, Michael Sarkeesian, Mary Cordero, Lindsay Zev, and Lori Ferris. Reporter Margaret Catcher produced that piece. Before we let you go today, we'd like to honor the memory of a homegrown hero and someone whose arguably most famous work is a novel about a young sorcerer with red-brown skin, a wizard of Earthsea. Berkeley-born writer Ursula K. Le Guin passed away on Monday at her home in Portland, Oregon. Le Guin was the author of over 50 books and is often credited with bridging the worlds of science fiction and fantasy and so-called serious literary fiction. Here she is speaking in 2014 at the National Book Awards.
I think hard times are coming when we will be wanting the voices of writers who can see alternatives to how we live now and can see through our fear-stricken society and its obsessive technologies to other ways of being. And even imagine some real grounds for hope. We will need writers who can remember freedom. Poets, visionaries, the realists of a larger reality.
Bay Area documentarian Arwen Curry has spent nearly a decade working on a feature documentary film about the writer called Worlds of Ursula K. Le Guin. We share an excerpt here where we hear about the creation of Le Guin's fantasy world, Earthsea.
I had written a couple of short stories that took place on these islands where there were wizards and dragons. In 1968, when the publisher of Parnassus Books came to me and said, would you write a young adult novel? These islands grew and boom, this is a whole archipelago of islands, and now I draw the map. And I would name the rivers and the mountains and the cities, but I didn't know anything about them till I went there with my characters. I start pretty much with place, and then the people grow up in the place. As a boy, our hero was called Sparrowhawk, because the wild hawks would come when he called them. But his true secret name is Ged. Ged sails to Roke Island, the Isle of the Wise, hidden in the heart of the archipelago. From all over Earthsea, young men come to Roke to learn the art of magic, the craft of wizardry. This was not, at that time, a well-known concept, the idea of a wizard school.
I don't think Harry Potter could have existed without Earthsea having existed. That was the original, the finest, and the best.
In winter, he was sent across Roke Island to the farthest northmost cape, where stands the Isolate Tower. There, by himself, lived the Master Namer. Kurum Karmeruk sat on a high seat, writing down lists of names that must be learned before the ink faded at midnight, leaving the parchment blank again. You might say, he who would be seamaster must know the true name of every drop of water in the sea. Magic exists in most societies in one way or another. And one of the forms it exists in a lot of places is if you know a thing's true name, you have power over the thing or the person. And of course it's irresistible because I'm a writer, I use words. And knowing the names of things is, I do magic. I do make up things that didn't exist before by naming them. I call it Earthsea. And there it is. It exists. So I had this total parallel between wizards and artists to play with.
That was an excerpt from local filmmaker Arwen Curry's upcoming documentary film called Worlds of Ursula K. Le Guin, which you can look out for in festivals this year. Thanks to Arwen for sharing her work with us today. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.